Welcome, everyone, to episode 143 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to unveil our first post-lottery NBA mock draft for the 2018 season. We're going to go through the top 14 picks, and we're going to take turns picking for each team based on the results from the lottery that happened Tuesday night. Before we get underway, I wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're being hosted now on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. I should just elaborate on the whole coin toss thing.
Yep.
Because you and I are going to do a mock draft. We're not going to do it in terms of who we think are going to get drafted those slots. We are going to go the route of who we believe should get picked at that certain position.
Yep.
So if, you know, for example, if you win the lottery, I think we're pretty much in agreement that Luka Doncic could go number one. So we're not going to, you know, whoever one of us wins the lottery here just doesn't care about Luka going to Phoenix just because Devin Booker is there. Like, it would make sense that DeAndre Ayton goes there because he's the center. They don't have any, yada, yada, yada. But we are going best player available all the way through it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Perfect. So I'm going to flip the coin, and you're just going to call it heads or tails, okay?
Yep.
3, 2, 1.
Heads.
And you won.
All right. But I'm on the clock with the Phoenix Suns. Let's do it. So before we make our picks, more, we'll just go through the prospects, you know, most likely to be in discussion in those range, and just kind of break down what factors in here. So if I'm Ryan McDonough, I'm in charge of the Suns. It's really between Luka Doncic and DeAndre Ayton, right? There's not a third dark horse that's going to come up.
Well, Jaren Jackson Jr., I feel, is that third guy. I mean, look, there is the top three in terms of potential and worth, I feel, is, you know, Doncic, Ayton, and Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
But I do admit there is some sort of separation between Ayton, Doncic, and then Jackson. Like, Jackson is separated from those two, but he's a bit closer than what people think, I think.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, so you Doncic and Ayton are in a tier of their own. Would you have Jackson's the number three guy? Would you have Jackson in a tier above the next group, like Bagley and Bamba, or would you put those guys? Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, Jackson is in a tier all by himself, I feel. You could argue, though, that he could be put somewhat in the same group as Marvin Bagley and Mo Bamba and those guys, especially in looking at how good he is right now. Mm-hmm. But down the line, that's really the big thing. I think his potential has the ability to separate himself from the rest of the pack.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say otherwise. You made my pick at number three for the Hawks very easy if Jackson is on a tier of his own at number three. But let's focus on number one at the minute. So really, I mean, so far there haven't been any concrete rumors about which direction the Suns are leaning. We've heard they're kind of split. You know, some places are saying they're leaning toward Ayton, and John Gambadoro of Arizona Sports, he said they're 100% taking Ayton already, which, I mean, at this point in the evaluation process, I just don't think they have their minds made up either way, or at least
should we really take what he said seriously?
Right.
Because he came out with a hit piece on Doncic, which was quite embarrassing.
Just
saying the guy was all kinds of spoiled and selfish. And look, I have a lot of contacts in and around Europe. I've never heard anything like remotely. So a guy in Arizona sitting there going, this anonymous guy knows that. Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah. And they said,
blow out your ass, dude.
European basketball is terrible, and there's only 8 to 10 good teams. Yeah. So he's,
right. Oh, Villanova would beat Real Madrid.
Right.
Okay. That's fine.
Right.
A lot of
laziness in the narrative there. So, I mean, the draw for either guy is very obvious. If you're Phoenix, I mean, luckily, like, Phoenix is very lucky to win this lottery in particular, because really their two biggest needs are point guard and center. They, you know, and Not that Doncic necessarily should be a full-time point guard or is a full-time point guard, but a ball handler, I should say. Like a
right. Floor general. He's a ball handler. He's a secondary ball handler, right.
Yeah, and you know, you can put him next to Booker. They've put Booker not in a full-time on-ball role, but if you put Booker and Doncic together, those guys can both operate both on and off. So offensively, right. That could be a truly dynamic backcourt in the like as they get better and better in the coming years. So that's very appealing. On the other hand, duo,
by the way, or a wing duo, because Doncic could play the three.
Yeah, he's 6'8", right? And then Booker is 6'6". Yeah,
like 220, 225.
Right. And then Ayton, you know, he's 7'1", 250, has three-point range, could be a nightly 20-10 guy. If you're the Suns, the Alex Len experiment's going to be over in a couple months. You have Tyson Chandler on an expiring contract. But you're really, I mean, you're barren because you're not going to put Bender or Chris at the five. So really, I mean, it comes down to preference. I'm guessing they will take Ayton, but if I was running them, I would take Doncic. And In large part, I mean, I alluded to this, I think, an episode or two ago. You know, throughout the playoffs, we've seen that these, you know, the up-and-coming unicorn bigs outside of Anthony Davis, really, a lot of them have struggled at times. If you don't have the defensive quickness to guard out to the three-point line and then recover and get to the rim, you know, it when you're going up against a guy like an Al Horford or a Draymond Green, that becomes an issue. Like that became an issue for Joel Embiid in the second round against the Celtics. Miles Turner's impact was somewhat mitigated this year. You know, we all expected him to take a huge leap forward. Karl Anthony Towns, like, he is the prime unicorn. You know, he puts up ridiculous numbers, and then Houston just worked him like a speed bag throughout that first round series because he's not very good on defense. And that's, so far with Ayton, that's the concern, the biggest concern on his end, too. Now, that's not to say Doncic is a great defensive presence either, but I think it's easier to hide that with a wing because he's not your last line of defense than it is for Ayton, who would be. So, You know, yes, both of these guys are going to continue to get better. I don't think Phoenix could really go wrong either way, but I just think Doncic has the potential to become slightly more special than Ayton does.
So with the first pick in the 2018 NBA draft, Brian Toporek selects
Luka Doncic of Real Madrid for the Phoenix Suns. So I'm putting you on the clock at number two with the Kings, and I'm giving you the easiest decision
The
draft, yes?
Look, the Kings won the draft lottery night by many different ways. The fact that they moved up five spots, obviously a huge win, but they also came into a position where every ounce of pressure is off of them.
Yeah,
I feel when you're sitting at number one, that's a tough spot to be in because you have these two guys where there isn't one of them who is necessarily heads and shoulders above the other. So, you know, Sacramento's just sitting there going, well, whoever you don't pick is going to fall right into our laps.
Right.
And that's just a beautiful situation. And we've made a lot of fun about the Kings picking 15 million centers over the past half decade. But I'm not going to be joking about this one. DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah. So what do you think they would prefer? Would they want Ayton to go one so they could get Doncic? Or do you think they want Ayton?
I think they want Doncic. Yeah. I definitely think they would prefer Doncic, but I don't think they're going to look a gift horse in his mouth and go, well. But no, I mean, look, they have Buddy Hield, but that doesn't matter. And they also have Bogdan Bogdanovic.
Yep.
That adding Luka to that is just that means you have three primary wing guys who you can rotate in terms of minutes. Every one of them could get 30. It's not a problem. And they have, you know, Willie Cauley-Stein. I know they're not necessarily high on him. Same goes for Scalabissiere. But they have some bigs already. And Doncic next to De'Aaron Fox would be terrifyingly efficient. Because he works best next to a point guard, like a legit traditional point guard who handles the ball and sets up the offense. Like Doncic comes in and is the second guy. Like he's the secondary ball handler. In Real Madrid, he's used as the primary, but that's not necessarily the best option. So with him and De'Aaron Fox, I think he would just slide in there and would go pretty damn well. honestly. You can play him at the 2 and 3 at Doncic, right. And you can play Bogdanović at the 2 and 3. You can even, on occasion, rare occasion, you can even slide Bogdanović to the 4 if they go super small.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't advise it, but you could.
Right.
Buddy Hield is really the only guy there who's kind of slotted into one spot because he's not a ball handler, so he can't slide down to the 1. Mm-hmm. He's only 6'4 and not particularly long, so he can't go up to the 3.
Yeah.
So he's really a pure shooting guard. But they can make that work. And also, I'm not going to let Buddy Hield be the reason that Doncic wouldn't carve out like a starting slot. I mean, with all due respect to Buddy Hield, but hey, there's the bench.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and to your point about the Doncic not necessarily needing to be the starting point guard, it's what we saw at Eurobasket with him and Goran Dragic, and he really thrived in that role. So I could, mm-hmm. De'Aaron Fox is not the shooter that Goran Dragic is, not yet anyway, right. But he has that same kind of like slashing mentality. I could see those guys working really well together. So.
Did we really speak enough about De'Aaron Fox this year? I don't think we did. Like, he had a good year. People are just not talking about this kid.
Dude, I mean, I could not have been more ecstatic for the Kings to move up because the Sixers kept the Lakers pick, so now they owe either the better of the Kings pick or their own pick in 2019 to the Celtics as the final piece of the Markelle Fultz trade. So, like, the Kings are not going to make the playoffs next year in all likelihood, but I don't care who you add, either Ayton or Doncic, to this team. They're going to be significantly better than they were this year, and all of their young guys are going to have a full offseason to train. They know,
right.
They've gotten kind of their first taste of the NBA with Fox and Bogdanović. All of those guys are going to have a chance to really blossom. Like, this Kings team is not that far removed from being at least remotely competitive again. Like, they have a sneaky good young core, and they're about to add the franchise piece of that puzzle,
which in this case is DeAndre Ayton. I just spent a lot of time talking about Doncic in Sacramento, but you obviously picked him. They would use Willie Cauley-Stein and potentially Scalabissier as some trade prospects.
Mm-hmm.
To see if they can move some pieces around and get some help under the wing, maybe a legit power forward. And it should be mentioned, even though he's 7'1 and 250, Ayton was used as a 4 at Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he would prefer to slide down and be a full-time 4 in the NBA, but he could theoretically play the position here and there.
Mm-hmm.
He's quick enough, athletic enough, he's got a shooting touch. It would be interesting to see the Kings sort of play around with him at the 4, just a little bit.
And, I mean, if they don't trade Cauley-Stein, I think he's entering the 4th year, so he's going to be a restricted free agent next summer. I believe Scal has 2 more years, so they're not under as much pressure to either trade him or re-sign him right away. But, like, yeah, you could see a situation where Ayton and Cauley-Stein are the starting front court, and they're effectively interchangeable. Like, The sooner you get Zach Randolph out of that starting front court, the better. With all due respect to Z-Bo. But then Z-Bo could come in, play some minutes alongside either one of those guys off the bench. You get Scal. Like, the fit there is really good as well. Like, I know it would be somewhat duplicative just because they have a Cauley-Stein, but you're not going to let Willie Cauley-Stein on the last year of his rookie deal dissuade you from taking DeAndre Ayton if Luka Doncic is off the board.
Exactly.
Especially because, a lot of the next tier of guys are all front court guys as well. So it's like you don't really have a choice either way. So
All right,
so the number 2 pick, you are locking it in. DeAndre Ayton going to the Kings. Congratulations, King fans. Hawks, I mean, you said it earlier. Jaren Jackson Jr. is the third best prospect in this class. The Hawks are in a weird spot right now because you have Taurean Prince, who both of us love. John Collins played well as a rookie. He's going to only get better. Those are the only two guys you can feel confident in going forward as, like, hopefully long-term pieces of your puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Schroeder has made news in the last week or so. There was an interview, apparently, with some German publication. I'm not sure if it was a publication or if it was just at a German press conference, but he was basically saying, like, He wants the hell out of Atlanta. He mentioned Indiana and Milwaukee as places that he wanted to go. I would assume the Hawks would be more than happy to oblige him. Oh, so yeah. They're, in theory, they're going to need a point guard, but I think number three is too high to go on Trae Young. You would have... There aren't many great options in free agency this year, but there will be some. Or, you know, you have another... You have two other picks at 19 and 30, so you could look there for the point guard. A guy like Jaren Jackson, who averaged 3 blocks a game in, what, less than 25 minutes? He shot 39.6% from three-point range on 96 three-point attempts.
He played under 22 minutes and averaged almost 11.6 boards and 3 blocks. Shot 80 from the line, 40 from 3, and 51 overall.
God. And yeah, I mean, he came in measurable wise, you know, as, I mean, he was 6'11 and a quarter in shoes. He had a wingspan north of 7'5, a standing reach of 9'2. Like, he would pair very well next to John Collins. Like, him and John Collins would be your second coming of the Al Horford, Paul Millsap front court.
And to note, Jackson is a year younger than Aiden, for example.
Wow. Yeah, there you go. So
more than a year younger. So there's just that added potential layer to him.
Yeah.
He's interchangeable. You can play him at the 4 or the 5.
Yeah. The other guy, if I'm Atlanta, the other guy I'm considering here isn't Marvin Bagley. It's Mo Bamba. Yep. But as you said, Jaren Jackson is a year younger, not only than Ayton, but also Bamba as well, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, but Bamba is 20.
Okay, and Jackson's still 18?
Yeah, 18, and let's see here. He was born on September 15th, 1999.
Okay, so yeah, he'll
God, be 19. God, I'm old, Brian.
I know. They're going to be 2000s babies in the NBA next year. That's... Ugh. The measurables were off the charts, as we'll talk about shortly. But... He's a work in progress offensively, whereas Jackson, you don't have to worry about that as much. I just think the age, the fit next to Collins, I think Jackson is the pick. So I'm locking in Jaren Jackson to the Atlanta Hawks at 3, which puts you back on the clock, Mort. The Memphis Grizzlies, one of the biggest losers of the draft lottery.
Yeah. Dropped 2 spot.
Yeah, entered with the second best odds, slid down to number 4. So wipe off the disappointment, Mort. Where I think the question for Memphis is, what do you do here? Like, not in terms of prospects, but like, what's your organizational direction? Like, are you still trying
to pick?
Yeah, but like, are you still trying to build around Conley or Gasol, or are you realizing? Okay, yeah.
Obviously not. I mean, they might be, but I'm not. And right. Right now, I'm the fictitious general manager. No, here's the thing. They are actually considering, allegedly, trading the 4th pick.
Yeah, which is crazy to me.
Which is completely insane. They apparently want either someone who's more established to come in and play with Conley and Gasol immediately, which would give them, you know, granted, it would give them a slight window, but... You know, what are you going to use with that window?
Right.
Yeah, you're going to stand there and look out of it. That's it.
Yeah, you're going to maybe get to the second round, at which point the Warriors or the Rockets or the Spurs
will stomp you.
Buzzsaw you, yeah.
Yeah, completely. So it doesn't make any sense. I'm going Mo Bamba at 4.
Bastard.
I'm keeping the pick, and I'm going Mo Bamba. And a lot of people right now are going, damn, no Marvin Bagley? Yeah, no Marvin Bagley. Look, Mo Bamba... 7'10 wingspan. Come on. And he measured taller as well. He was listed at 6'11 all year. Mm-hmm. He is almost 7'1. 7'1 with a 7'10 wingspan, Brian.
I know.
This is a combine record. The fact that he's developing a 3-point shot, like, he's lowered his release point as well. Mm-hmm. We've seen the videos. Like, he actually, you know, he kind of made his shot more compact. Mm-hmm. Which is hard to do with long arms, I should add. But somehow he's done that, which is very encouraging. He also shot 68% from the free throw line at Texas, which is a good indicator of him being able to actually produce offensive numbers. Mm. Now, he's not a playmaker. He's a rim roller. He's a dunker. Maybe down the line, he will become sort of a three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen. He took almost two shots from there per game at Texas. I don't think, and he took nine shots overall, I don't think that percentage is going to stick in the NBA. He's probably going to take 10% of his shots as threes, which is fine. I mean, test it out. I mean, yeah. You have years to develop, so that's fine. Rim roll, be a defensive anchor, and take it from there and change the entire course of the Memphis franchise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to your question, after selecting Bamba, you should see what you can get from Gasol and for Conley. Mm-hmm. What type of deals are out there? Who is in need of something immediate and willing to pay that money to get them on? You know, you might have to take a bad contract in return, or maybe an expiring contract if you're that inclined or that lucky. Mm-hmm. But go for picks and start the rebuild. I mean, I hate to see another team rebuild, but it's necessary at this point.
The point is they should have done this 4 months ago when...
Oh, yeah.
When the trade deadline came and they were dead in the water and Gasol was talking about how unhappy he was, that was your time to sell high. Or
absolutely.
As high as you could. Because, yes, now his trade value is only getting lower because he's getting closer to free agency. And then if you take Bamba, if you're the Grizzlies, then every other team knows, oh, okay, we can lowball you because you're stuck in this situation where you're either going to lose Gasol for nothing next year, or, you know, you're going to have to sell for 60 cents on the dollar. So,
right.
As the Mavericks at number five, I am cursing you because in terms of, like, prospect fit and, you know, how the draft is likely to fall, I don't think there's a better marriage on the board than Mo Bamba and the Mavericks at five. I think he is exactly what they need. He's what they thought they were getting out of Nerlens Noel, but obviously that went south, and then Nerlens is going to be a free agent. So,
should we take just a second and tell people what we think would have happened in the first four?
Yeah, we can do that.
I mean, look, we're talking about you chose Doncic first. I said Aiden second. I think it's going to be the reverse.
Yeah, I would agree.
And at three, we've heard that the Hawks are in love with Marvin Bagley. Mm-hmm. That could be the pick. Then making Jaren Jackson number four. And that means your boy, Mo Bamba, actually getting to Dallas at five.
Well, I could also see the Grizzlies taking Bagley at four if they're really committed to, you know, if Jackson goes three, they are committed to Conley and Gasol, and they want, like, a guy to compliment Gasol. They don't want to take his replacement in Bamba. So I could see them going Bagley there. You know, I think those four will be off the board in some, like, Ayton and Doncic one and two in some order, Jackson and Bagley three and four in some order, and and the Mavericks are going to get really lucky and get Bamba at five.
Bamba.
But if he is off the board, I mean, you could go Wendell Carter here just because you still need a center, but, you know, Dirk is still coming back. He's been playing center effectively for the last year or two. So I think you probably take Bagley here as your...
Are you really considering positions and, like, taking into account a 40-year-old man?
Well, I'm just saying Bagley more as, like, your second coming of Dirk. Not they're the same player by any means.
Oh, like a guy with a franchise-level potential. Okay,
Yep. The guy who can, like, who can be your star, who can replace Dirk if and whenever he retires. Because, you know, Wendell Carter is going to be a really good player too, but he doesn't have the same type of offensive upside, obviously. He's a better defender. Right. But Bagley, you know, you could see him developing into a 20-plus point per game scorer rather
easily. And a double-digit rebounder, right?
Yeah. So yeah. I would guess if Bagley's still on the board at five, that's the direction they go. Trae Young's not an option, really, because they just took Dennis Smith Jr., Michael Porter would be the wild card, I guess, if his medicals check out. I mean, we just don't know anything about, you know, how that's going to go. And we're not going to until, frankly, the draft. But he did measure out well at almost 6'11", has over a 7-foot wingspan. So, you know, he was the second-ranked prospect heading into college. Obviously, the back injury limited him, only 53 minutes all season. So we haven't seen enough of him to really know where he stands right now. So,
right.
To be safe, as the Mavericks, since Bamba's off the board, I'm going Bagley at 5. And now I'm setting you up at 6 with the Magic.
Right. Who, let me just, yeah. The Magic, I think, are going to take Trae Young.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the wrong play. So I'm going to have Wendell Carter go here.
Ooh, uh-oh. Trae Young's going to fall in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
You just mentioned Michael Porter.
Yeah.
Yeah. His bad back and the lack of data on him is concerning.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly he's only going to give the Bulls and the Knicks his medical.
Yeah.
And he's basically flirting with the Bulls every day.
Yeah.
Like, to a big degree. Like, he's staying in Chicago right now. He's wearing Bulls gear. He's talking up the organization big time. It seems like he's... And the Bulls are kind of responding. They like him. So I could expect him to go 7, but I would also not be surprised if Orlando was turned off by the fact that they didn't have the medical records.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went, okay, who's the best player on the board at this point, ignoring like Michael Porter?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Wendell Carter. Wendell Carter is a 6'10 power forward / center, can play both spots, who is a very gifted shot blocker, very gifted rebounder, can score from the post, can score from the mid-range, can even stretch out to the three-point line, can get to the free-throw line, and can initiate high-low passing and set up teammates. Like, he's really a jack-of-all-trades, and he tested really well at the combine, coming up with a wingspan that was 7'4.5".
Mm.
Those are long arms, and that allows him to play center.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, the knock on Carter is he was kind of slow. He didn't have the lateral quickness. But the thing was, he played the vast majority of the season at Duke, listed over 260.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means, when he came into the season, like he was weighed, and it was 260.
Mm-hmm.
At the combine here, 251. That's not a major drop off, but it is some, and he looked shredded in some of the photographs and the videos that came about. So he might be going on that whole Julius Randle change up there.
Yeah.
Which would make him quicker. And I'm missing the logic here, because a lot of people are saying that because he's slow footed and he won't regain that speed. But as we've seen on multiple occasions, and again lately with Randle, like, when you lose weight, you become quicker. Like, Tim Duncan lost 20 pounds over a summer and looked 5 years younger.
Mm-hmm.
You had, you and I've talked about Randle before. Like, he's just exploding off the court now compared to previous seasons.
Yep.
So Carter has the potential to get down to that 240, 245 level, where I think that's the sweet spot for him, where he can really use his body a lot more. He's just so clever. I mean, he's not a guy who's going to make rash decisions.
Mm-hmm.
He reads the plays, and I think he's just so fundamentally sound that you can't go wrong with him. He's a very safe pick.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be honest here. Orlando needs a safe pick for a change.
Yeah, well, I mean, the question I would have is, obviously, they have a giant hole in the backcourt after trading Elfrid Payton, which is why we both think they're going to actually take Trae Young at 6.
Correct, yeah.
They have Aaron Gordon is going to be a restricted free agent. We don't know whether they're going to retain him. We assume most likely they will try to, unless he gets like a truly exorbitant offer. You also have Jonathan Isaac, who you took with the 6th pick last year. You have Nikola Vucevic on the last year of his deal. You have Bismack Biyombo there with 2 years left on his deal. The point is, they have a very crowded front court already.
They do.
You taking Carter is just saying you don't give a shit. They should trade Vuce. They should just dump Biyombo.
Right. Absolutely. Look, we prefaced this by saying that we're going best player available.
Mm-hmm.
Screw circumstances.
Yeah.
By that logic, Phoenix should have taken DeAndre Ayton.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, and the point, I mean, the reason I asked that question is neither of those guys, in theory, if you're taking Wendell Carter at sixth, you're saying, I mean, Biombo is obviously not part of your future. That was just a mistake from the get-go. You're saying Vooch is not a part of your future. And you're ready to move on, and you're going to try to trade him. And like, just because they have a crowded front court now doesn't mean they will 3 months from now or 2 years from now. Like, if you see a guy who you think can be your franchise center,
right,
you take him and then, you know, fill the hole in your backcourt. Otherwise, I like
Vooch,
that pick.
Vooch can shoot the three, so he's got some trade potential or trade value.
Yeah.
You can ship him off for a point.
Yeah, especially as an expiring now. And right. It's not a huge contract. I think it's only like 12 or 13 million, somewhere around there.
Dennis Schroeder was looking for a new home.
Oh, yeah, dude. He is so destined to become the Magic's next point guard. It's not even funny.
Right? Yeah. If they don't draft Trae Young, they're going to trade for Dennis.
Sure. Yeah. For sure. All right, so I'm on the clock at 7. I've got your former team, the Chicago Bulls. I'm going to oblige Michael Porter here. I mean, at this point in the draft, like, again, if you're the Bulls, you're theoretically committed to Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, although I know that kills you inside to hear it, Mort. So you're not going to take Trae Young for that reason. Michael Porter, like, he does have that tantalizing upside, especially you plug him between a LaVine and a Lauri Markkanen. Like, you know, this is all assuming that his back checks out, or at least isn't, like, you know, a threat to be a career-ending or, like, career-altering injury. We're assuming the best health for everyone here, not just Porter, but Porter in particular. But again, like, this dude was the second-ranked prospect in his draft class, or in his recruiting class, I think, behind Bagley. Like, if he was healthy the whole year, we would probably be talking about him as a top five pick. So,
oh, we would.
If you're the Bulls at 7 and you can get someone with that type of talent, albeit slightly risky, I think you take the plunge here.
And he also tested well. I mean, he was listed at 6'10". He's closer to 6'11".
Yeah.
Now, his wingspan is only 7 feet and a quarter, which isn't great when you're 6'11". But at that, when you're up in those size areas, like, it's still a 7 foot wingspan. It doesn't, obviously, it's not Mo Bamba 7'10 caliber or even Wendell Carter caliber, but it's like, it's fine. And defensively, he's a problem. But you're right, he's got the home run potential offensively.
Yeah. And at 7, that's the type of swing you should take, especially with, you know, you have a bunch of young prospects already who, if you miss here, it's not the end of the world if you're the Bulls. Because in all likelihood, you're going to be right back in this spot next year, despite their best intentions.
I just said yeah, but I actually regretted that immediately, because I do think this year is pretty essential for them. They need to hit this one. They really do. Because next year the draft changes.
It's going to be weaker.
It's going to be weaker as well. And considering the fact that John Paxson was out to say that they're not going to go through this again, like, they are set on this 1 year rebuild, which is ridiculous and a conversation for another day.
Sure.
But that also means that they better hit.
Yeah. But like, Porter seems like he seems like a guy who, if they hit, it's going to hit hard. Like, if you want to really expedite your rebuild, you take a Michael Porter and, you know, just hope medically he checks out, because he will speed up your rebuild if he is medically sound.
Right.
So
in his, because we don't have a lot of stats on Porter, college-wise, because of the back injury, I'm just going to read you at least the stats that I've found from his senior year in high school. 36.2 points and 13.6 rebounds. And they went 29-0.
Seems pretty good.
That is at least something that's worth the mention. And given how athletic he is, you know, and again, assuming his back, there are a lot of ifs with Michael Porter Jr. I mean, that's just going to be the case. But he could be one of those guys who, if healthy, you look back at in 5 years and go, oh, he's a top three talent from the draft.
Yeah, like, how the hell did he slip to number 7?
Right. But yeah. Also worth mentioning is if it's true that he would only provide the Bulls and the Knicks with his medical records,
yeah,
then he could slip to 7 just by default.
Right. Right.
Like, back injuries are no joke.
Yep.
And if teams do not get intel, like, they, no, like, Phoenix, Sacramento, Atlanta, Memphis, Dallas, Orlando, none of these teams have any desire to pick someone with, like, a degenerate back.
Yeah.
Like, that would just be a waste draft pick. None of them can afford it.
Orlando is the only one I could see maybe taking that gamble. But
even at 6, though?
Yeah. Well, just because, I mean, if they're not sold on Trae Young, like, I agree. Doncic, 8-1-2, some combo of Jackson, Bagley, Bamba, 3-4-5. So right. If they think at 6 Porter is the best player available and they're willing to take the risk, maybe. But again, they have more glaring needs elsewhere.
They hold him hostage for the Bulls, honestly.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, payback for what Sam Hinkie did to them a couple of years ago with Elfrid Payton.
Hey, why not? That's a lesson learned, right?
Yeah, I would hope so. So, yeah, I'm taking Porter at 7, which puts you back on the clock. The Cleveland Cavaliers at 8, Mort. Again, yeah. I'm going to ask you the same question I did with Memphis. If you're Cleveland, I mean, we talked about them in the conference finals, and we're recording this on Friday, so this is going to come out on Monday, so we don't know what happened in Game 3, but either way, we're assuming Cleveland is going to ultimately lose this series, which seems to pave the way for LeBron to be leaving in July. So, Mort, if you're the Cavs, do you entertain shopping this pick around, either to trade it for a star? I don't think it's enough on its own to get a Kawhi Leonard, but maybe you package it with Kevin Love to get someone like Leonard, or, you know, there are rumblings that Karl Anthony Towns could be had in Minnesota via Brian Windhorst. Yeah.
Not for number 8.
Not for number 8 in Love, especially. Yeah, Love probably not going back to Minnesota. But do you entertain that? Do you look at trading down? Do you see if a team like the Sixers or the Hornets want to move up to 8 for a certain prospect, or do you just stand pat and take?
I stand pat. Look,
okay,
I don't think Cleveland should look at LeBron anymore as this beacon that they need to adjust their course to every time.
Mm-hmm.
Those days should be over. I know that he might now stick around a little bit. That's just like the market could dry up. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like LeBron could end up staying, or he couldn't. That's beside the point. I need Cleveland to start making decisions for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Look, LeBron is also going to be 34 next time, so eventually, at some point down the line, he will start to decline, and then it might come in handy to have someone there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they need a shot maker who mm-hmm. isn't LeBron, regardless of they have LeBron or not. You know who's a shot maker? You know who's a play facilitator?
Trae Young. Yep.
And here's the thing. So many people are laughing at Trae Young and going, oh, he could be the ultimate bust. I have a problem with that. I have a major problem with that. He averaged 27 points and 9 assists as a freshman in college.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that if you don't have game.
Right.
Like, he might have some defensive issues. We don't know. We've been through this before. We don't know anything about Trae Young's defense because he didn't get a chance to play it because he was asked to average goddamn 30 and 10 for the vast majority of the season.
Right.
So he just didn't have the stamina to keep up with that, which is completely understandable, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot tell me in any way that Trae Young is going to come into the league and he's going to be so overmatched that he cannot average double-figure points.
Yeah.
And not be a playmaker. No. Right. This dude is going to come into the league, might not right off the bat, but he's at a bare minimum going to be like, what, a 15-7 guy?
Yeah.
Like, I don't see any scenario in which he won't be a good scorer on the NBA level, given his shot making, his ability to get to the free throw line as well. I know he'll take punishment. He'll probably miss some games. But you know what? Look, there's big guys in college too. Not as big as in the NBA, granted, but he fell on his ass plenty, and he got back up.
Right. Especially, I mean, you're talking about him doing 15-7. If he's on a Cleveland Cavaliers team without LeBron James,
that's going to shoot up.
Yeah, like he's going to be one of the top two options on that team next year.
Right. So, I mean, I just think it's ridiculous that people are looking at him and going, oh, he's not going to become anything. Look, the guy averaged 8.6 free throw attempts per game. Like, you don't average that in college.
Mm-hmm.
You don't.
Yeah.
And this is a freshman, and all the Jimmer Fredette comparisons go home. I mean, yeah. It's so dumb. He's not a long player. Yeah, he's pretty slight.
Yeah.
That's fine. You know who else is slight? And I'm not making the comparison because he's not going to be that, but Steph Curry.
Right. He's a little bit shorter and has slightly smaller wingspan than Curry, which is...
Right, but this is not Muxie Bogues, is my point.
Yeah, right. He's still 6'2". Like,
right, and people make it sound like this is Muxie coming out. And it's just like, no.
Right. I mean, he's not even Chris Paul.
Chris Paul. He's bigger than Chris Paul.
Yeah.
So... Here's a shot maker and a shot taker, and he's got some cojones, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, I like guys who are willing to take tough shots and are willing to take on, like, the primary mantle. That's partly why I loved Donovan Mitchell last year. Mm-hmm. Like, you saw that fight in him. I loved the intensity. I loved the way that he competed. Trae Young, exact same mentality.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have the physical stature or the athletic ability as Mitchell did. So he's not going to be that type of player,
mm-hmm.
but he's still going to be good. Like, he's going to be an asset at the very least. He's not going to be a bust.
Yeah. I think at most the lowest he falls is to the Knicks at 9. But I would be shocked. I mean, I'd be surprised if he makes it past the Magic at 6. But I think if mm-hmm. he does, it'd be very hard for the Cavaliers to pass on him at 8, especially if the board breaks this way. I would say really the only other guy who should be under consideration there is Porter Jr. or Wendell Carter, but both of those guys are gone in this particular mock.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I love the pick there.
And before even we move on to the Knicks here,
yeah,
I don't want you to cheat right now.
I'm not going to. I'm going to take Mikal Bridges, and I'm going to hate myself for it. But, yeah, yep. I mean, I think, look, the Knicks are going to suck next year. Because Kristaps is going to miss some, if not all, of the season as he recovers from the torn ACL. So they should not be taking a prospect who they think is going to help them make them competitive immediately, because they are not going to be competitive immediately. They should be taking the prospect who has, you know, who fits. Really, they need to consider the fit next to Kristaps. And you're looking at a guy like Mikal Bridges, who's really, I mean, you know, every team in the NBA right now wants these 3-and-D wings. Mm-hmm. Mikal Bridges is the best 3-and-D wing in this draft class. You've got he does struggle to create off the dribble. I mean, maybe that's something he develops. He is a little bit older than a lot of prospects. He's a junior. He's 21 already.
He'll be 22 when the season starts.
Yeah. So you can, you know, you don't want to like say, oh yeah, he'll develop that down the line. There's no guarantee he does. But he still has value because he's an improving 3-point shooter. He shot above 43% for this year?
Yeah, 43.5% from downtown, 85% from the line.
Yeah, and that was on almost 240 3-point attempts. So
yeah, he had a true shooting percentage of 65.5%.
Yeah, so, you know, you don't need a guy, if you're the Knicks, like, this year... While Porzingis is out, Tim Hardaway Jr. is going to be your number one offensive option, depending on what happens with Enes Kanter, if he turns down his player option. I mean, if he doesn't, he stays with the Knicks, or if he does turn down his player option and the Knicks re-sign him, he'll be their number two. So Bridges will be no more than their number three option on offense, which is perfect. Like, you're not drafting Bridges to be what Michael Porter... You know, he doesn't have the same type of upside as a Michael Porter. Like, he's probably not going to be a takeover 25-point-per-game scorer at any point in his NBA career. He's going to be more along the lines of a Trevor Ariza or a Robert Covington, but those guys have immense value right now. So that's the type of prospect you should want to see. You know, it doesn't matter where you put Kristaps, the 4 or the 5, Mikal would be a great fit on the wing next to him. So
mm-hmm.
it kills me to do it, because you know, and I'm going to be jonesing for it for the next month. I want Bridges to fall to 10 to the Sixers. I don't think it's going to happen. So Mikhail at 9. And now you, my friend, get to assume the role of Brian Colangelo once again.
Right. So there are two names in play here for the Sixers, I feel. Okay. It's either Miles Bridges from Michigan State, or it's Zaire Smith from Texas Tech.
Yep.
You can't really go wrong with either. And in regards to Philly, who is a playoff team, getting someone like Zaire Smith, who is yet to turn 19, who is going to be at least a short-term project, I'm questioning whether they would prefer to go with a long-term project or they'll go with someone who can participate or have an impact immediately. And I'm leaning towards the latter with Miles Bridges, who is a type of hybrid forward. Like, he can play the three and he can play the four. He can handle the ball. People are calling him Draymond, but that's just because he originates from Michigan State, so that's dumb.
Yeah.
But he can handle the ball at the power forward position, but he's a very small power forward in that case. He's under 6'7".
Yeah.
So he'll find a lot of minutes at the three. He's sort of an inconsistent shooter, but he's gotten a lot better from the line, for example, so there is optimism to have. Like, he's active on the boards, he can pile up assists, and he can have those games where he just goes off offensively. Like, he's not going to be TLC here, who struggles offensively.
Right.
He will come in and be an offensive factor, and he'll get on the boards, and, you know, he'll do a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
What's a little bit weird here is the Sixers kind of already have that in Dario Saric.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have it partly in Robert Covington.
Mm-hmm.
So while my pick is Miles Bridges, I have a feeling that Philly would trade that pick.
Yeah, I think if Bridges is off the board, I wouldn't be opposed Mikhail to trading. Mikhail Bridges. Yeah, right. Mikhail Bridges is off the board. I wouldn't be opposed to trading down. I like both Miles and Zaire Smith, and we'll talk about a bunch of both of those guys a bunch in the next month or so. I also think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would be a potentially interesting fit. I don't think he's necessarily the best player available at that spot, but if you're looking for someone who can create off the dribble, that was one of the things they really did not have in that series against Boston in particular. So it's going to be a tough... I mean, hopefully someone falls. Like, hopefully Mikhail Bridges or Wendell Carter falls to 10, so they just don't have to deal with that. But it's very possible that they're looking to trade there. Or, you know, I mean, we talked about it two episodes or three episodes ago. Philly has a wide range of opportunities this summer. Like, for all we know, they're going to package that with, you know, Markel Fultz and Dario Saric and trade it to the Spurs for Kawhi Leonard or something. So, all right. I'm on the clock, Charlotte. Yes,
you are. But before you go with Charlotte, I just a minute ago got a question on Twitter about this pick, the 11th pick. So I think that's kind of fitting.
Okay.
It's a Bulls fans who who's asking me, would you trade the Bulls 22nd for the 11th pick, with the caveat, of course, that the Bulls take on one of Charlotte's big ass deals to clear up some cap space.
Oh, like,
so I think that's pretty relevant given the
Like, which of their many big ass deals are we talking about?
You take that's the thing.
Yeah,
like, how what? Yeah, that you're essentially moving up 11 slots
right
in the first round. So what you are asking here is, what is that move worth?
Yeah, cap wise.
Yeah. Is it a Cody Seller? Is it Marvin Williams?
Or I think you're gonna get out of Nick Batum if you're the if you're the Hornets, you want to get out of that one.
But would anyone, you know, pay that amount of money just to move up 11 spots in a somewhat weak draft when it comes to depth?
Yeah, right. Where the depth drops off somewhat considerably after the first 9 or 10 picks. Yeah, it's a fair question. I mean, here's the thing. If I'm in charge of Charlotte, I realize that my cap is screwed for the next 2 to 3 years. I realize that I need to trade Kemba Walker this offseason. Mm-hmm. I realize that Jeremy Lamb also might be leaving me after this season because he's going to be an unrestricted free agent in 2019.
Yep.
So I'm looking toward the backcourt here because I realize like that's going to be an area of need right now. So for me, it comes down to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Colin Sexton. Unless I trade Kemba by draft night, I'm leaning Shai here just because at least he can be, you know, kind of a combo guard, whereas Colin Sexton's going to be just a straight up point guard. And that, again, it'd be the same situation as what happened with you at Memphis at 4, where you take Mo Bamba and then all of a sudden teams start circling like vultures and say, oh, all right, you're trading Kemba. Well, here's 30 cents on the dollar for him. Whereas with Shai, you can at least, you know, pass it off as, no, we just, like, we didn't have, like, Michael Carter-Williams was our backup point guard last year.
Right.
And that was a absolute disaster. So we need a guy who can come in behind Lamb, behind Kemba, help us win now, but also be groomed as one of our backcourt members of the future. So.
Wow, no Zaire Smith. I just realized.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one, I'm not, like, too disheartened by this, but he did come in slightly smaller than I expected. He was only 6'4 in shoes. He's got right. Almost a 6'10 wingspan, so I'm not sweating that too hard. But, again, with him, it's more like, all right, you take him, you're basically announcing to the NBA that Jeremy Lamb is up for sale.
Right. He did have a 41.5-inch vertical, though.
Yeah, I mean, right. He's like an athletic marvel. I mean, he's...
Right.
And like, you... I mean, I guess the question is, how much do you value Malik Monk? And, you know, do you think... Like, I don't think Zaire Smith at 6'4 can play much 3. I think Malik Monk, you know, do you think he can play the point? Or are you still envisioning him as a 2-guard?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I could see Monk get spot minutes at the 1, but ultimately his best position at the 2, and mm-hmm. the same would go with Zaire. So yeah.
But yeah. That's not to say I don't love Zaire. Like I'm just, again, I'd still be totally fine with him at 10.
Right, but with Shai, you're getting like a combo guard.
Yeah, exactly. It just gives you more options if you're Charlotte and you're going to need that type of flexibility moving forward because your roster and your cap is just such a cluster F.
Oh, I like that. Then I'm going to take Zaire Smith for the Clippers.
At 12?
At 12 via Detroit pick.
Wow, interesting. Okay.
Because he's just the best kid left on the board, honestly.
Yeah.
Wildly athletic, defensive oriented, developing offensively, still not turning 19, still not 19 yet. On the crush of it, but still, like, he's going to be 19 all throughout his rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
He averaged over a block and a steal in limited minutes, so you know that he's going to contribute defensively. I don't see a downside here because the Clippers are not going to be competitive next year.
Well, they were pretty competitive this year. Even after the Blake
trade. They're not going to be next year. Yeah, but they're not going to be next year.
They get Beverly back. They get another pick coming to 13. It depends what happens with DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, but even then, look, he's declining year by year. You're going to ask Tobias Harris to do virtually everything for you next year. I don't think that's a winning combination. And also, I think this draft in particular presents a wonderful opportunity for them to build a new squad. Mm-hmm. I mean, starting out with 12 and 13th.
Yeah.
That's a good start. Yeah. So take it home with number 13 here for the Clippers. Like, man, who joins Zaire Smith?
You made it tough because I would have expected Colin Sexton to go at 12, and then you could take a guy like Robert Williams at 13. And then,
but you can take Colin Sexton now and give them a new backcourt.
I know. Yeah, well, now I'm torn between Colin Sexton and Robert Williams because if you're the Clippers, you know, for the DeAndre Jordan decision is looming over your head. provided that he declines his player option, which we expect him to. Then again, we don't know what's going to happen with Teodosic. He has a $6.3 million player option. I don't think he said whether he plans on picking it up or not. You got Pat Beverley, one more year under contract, only $5 million, so it's cheap, and it's non-guaranteed until January. So you could technically, you know, start the season with him, but if Sexton really goes off, you could waive him for cap room, even though I don't think they would do that. I'll go Sexton here. Just because.
Nice. Yeah. New backcourt.
Yeah, I think they obviously need a long-term point guard after Chris Paul left. They also need a long-term center. No offense to Boban, who I do hope to see get more minutes, but I think there are going to be more guys available in the free agent market. Not only, I don't think Clint Capella is going anywhere, but Brook Lopez might be available depending on what happens with the Lakers and their infinite amount of cap space. You've got a Nerlens Noel floating around out there. You know, Alex Len, you could take a flyer on. So I'm with you more. I shouldn't have said the Clippers are not going to be like legit title contenders next year. And they might not even be in the playoff picture come March. But I also don't think they're like a 20-win team. I think they're going to be, somewhere in the 30s, whether that's low to mid-30s or possibly even, 30, like high 37 and 45 or whatever. Again, a lot of it comes down to what happens with DeAndre Jordan. But yeah, I think given the landscape of how many teams have point guards that they either want to develop or, they are either the guys who are like really great or guys who are up and coming and they want to develop, I think the Clippers need to get a guy like that. So give me Colin Sexton at 13. And that puts you back on the board more at 14. Denver Nuggets, the last pick of the lottery teams.
You got 46-win team that didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, a team with an already absurd young core of Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, and Nikola Jokic.
So you can look at it in one or two ways. Do you want to take a project here for Denver that is a couple years away but could be a difference maker because of his versatility? Or do you take a defensive-oriented guy immediately who can come in and block shots and rebound the basketball, backing off Jokic? And I think the latter is probably the safer bet, which means I am going with Robert Williams, who ironically is slotted to Denver at 14 on Tankathon's mock draft, I realize.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. I'm actually not insanely high on Williams because he can't make free throws. He's shooting them at a 47% clip, which I find worrisome.
Okay.
But he doesn't get to the line a whole lot. And if you look at him strictly as a shot blocker and a rebounder and a guy who can finish lobs, then that becomes a little bit better. He's 6'9", has a 7'4 wingspan, so he is long, he's athletic. He can run the floor. He can play both the 4 and the 5, theoretically, even though I would prefer to play him full-time 5. When you're offensive-limited, I don't want you to play the 4 a whole bunch. Denver is just such an impressive offensive team that I think they can play him without hurting their offense too much.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that wouldn't be true on a lot of different squads.
Yeah, I could see that. He strikes me as a guy wherever, like, he's not getting the buzz of a top 10 pick, but I think wherever he ends up, a team is going to be very happy to have gotten him. So yeah, I could see that being a good fit behind Jokic and Paul Millsap, like as your third big off the bench ahead of Mason Plumlee eventually. Yeah.
And it should be noted, though, just so I don't forget, like last year, he's a sophomore from Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
Like he did hit 59% of his free throws last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just he took a little bit of a step down from his freshman to sophomore season. A lot of people were kind of expecting him to become one of the better college players this year.
Right.
And he didn't deliver on that, which I think has hurt his draft stock and hurt the overall opinion of what he could become.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this added element of, oh, is his development just a little bit delayed? Like, mm-hmm. who knows? If he makes the NBA, does he make that leap from his his sophomore season in college and then to the NBA? Again, much like Donovan Mitchell, like, who took a major leap from freshman to sophomore, but then took a gigantic leap from sophomore to NBA. Like, maybe there is a part of you that feels that Robert Williams could become more on the next level.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I have to, you know, use the data that we have on him from college on, and that's like, that pigeonholes him as a rim runner, as a shot blocker, as a rebounder. So mm-hmm. that does have some value. And then, as we like to say, everything else is gravy.
Yeah, right. Well, it's especially good next to Jokic, who defense is not his calling point. So,
right.
You know, Millsap's there for two more years, but, you know, you're building around Jokic with the idea he's going to be there for 10 more years. So if you can get a Robert Williams, you know, let him develop off the bench for a year or two, then plug him in if and when Millsap leaves. I like it. I dig it. So,
and that concludes our lottery draft. Yeah,
so we will be doing plenty of draft coverage between now and June 21st, which is the night of the draft. We're not going to ignore the rest of the teams in the first round. Don't worry, we're going to have plenty of coverage on that. We're going to bring in some guests over the coming weeks, so stay tuned. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'm looking forward to more draft coverage. I always feel like an extra geek when we're doing prospects, and that's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too, even though this is the first time since we started the podcast where I'm not talking about a top 3 pick for the Sixers. It feels weird.
Yeah, is that a great thing or a bad thing, really? Because you've just gotten so used to it.
Yeah, I know. And they had the lottery party this year. The rights to Ricky Sanchez guys did. And they were like, why are we doing this? All right. Later, Mort.